The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
The Nicole Sandler Show. Questioning authority daily. And that could be the very reason why YouTube is upset. Hey, YouTube. The music bed you hear beneath my voice is from a broadcast sound library that I pay for and have the receipts. So I've got your copyright violation right here. And now, here's Nicole.
Sorry for cutting it off like that. I was playing the song off a video that I put together a few years ago with Cheryl Wheeler's song, If It Were Up to Me, a song that I first played on the radio in Los Angeles back in, I think it was the 1 year anniversary of the Columbine shooting, which I guess would have made it 2000. And I play it these days. Almost every time there's another mass shooting. Occasionally I get a little break because one of these mass shootings happens on the weekend. And by the time I'm back on the air on Tuesday, it's, I hate to say it's old news, but, you know, it's not top of mind anymore. And not that this one was top of mind, but here's what happened because you may not have even heard about it. Yesterday, six people are dead in a shooting at the Molson Coors complex in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Yes, where they make beer. Here's what happened. An employee, and there's some question about whether this was an employee who had been fired and came back to seek revenge on those who fired him or what the story was, but somebody who did work there stormed the Molson Coors complex yesterday and killed five people before turning the gun on himself. As of this morning, anyway, police have not named the 51-year-old shooter or any possible motive, but they did say he was an active employee at the brewing company. All of the victims were Molson Coors employees. They were found, all found in the same building. The attack is one of Milwaukee's deadliest mass shootings and the 11th in Wisconsin since 2004. The CEO of Molson Coors, called the attack an unthinkable tragedy and announced the company's corporate offices would be closed for the rest of the week, with the brewery closed until further notice. And I watched, you know, I tend to watch a network nightly newscast every night just to see how the corporate media is dealing with the news. So last night I watched the NBC nightly news, and I think it was story 3 or 4. You see, only 5 people on the shooter were killed. So I guess that's no longer, you know, the lead story. And I guess at a time when, you know, we're embarking on a global pandemic and the president keeps trying to, you know, downplay the risks, I guess that takes precedent over a mass shooting in which only 5 victims fell. I'm being a bit facetious here. And when Donald Trump, took to the podium last night for this press conference, his second time in over 3 years in office in the White House briefing room to actually have a briefing on the coronavirus, he opened with some, you know, I don't think he used the term thoughts and prayers, but that's what it was. You know, he extended his condolences to the people of Milwaukee. And that was it. Not a word about, we got to do something about it. We have a gun violence epidemic in this country. People shouldn't be allowed to get a hold of these weapons of mass killing. Nah, just people were killed. Another shooting. The First Lady and I send our thoughts and prayers to the people of Milwaukee and Wisconsin. Now on to the coronavirus. And I don't know what the answer is, because there is no answer. It's just one more fucked up thing about living in the USA. Welcome to it, everybody. Yeah. So here we are. And by the way, it was 1 year ago today, February 27th, 2019, that the House of Representatives passed a bill requiring universal background checks. But that bill's still sitting on Mitch McConnell's desk because he refuses to even hold a debate on the issue. Today might be a good day to call your senators. Like, for instance, I live in Florida. We have 2 Republican senators here. Just, you know. So I'll call their offices and call Mitch McConnell's office and demand he bring up this universal background check bill. We had another mass shooting in America yesterday and nobody's fucking talking about it. Because that's the way of life now. Unreal. But what else do you expect? In a country that's, you know, elected Donald Trump and is freaking out because, oh my God, there's a candidate who seems to be motivating and exciting masses of young people who traditionally don't participate in our electoral process about the idea of fairness, about, you know, making things more fair for the average working schmuck. Like me and you, if you're listening to the show, you probably are. And taking the advantage away from the billionaires. Cause that's such a risk. Oh, we'll get into all of this today. It's Thursday, so Howie Klein will be here. So much to talk about. All right. I want to change the mood a little bit. Lighten things up. I know, look, on days when I wind up playing Cheryl Wheeler to start the show, we don't start with a funny. I think we need a sort of a palate cleanser because we're not talking guns today. But I couldn't let that incident go by without commenting on it, as the rest of the news media seems to have. I get it. We're being attacked on all fronts by all the shit going on, from the coronavirus to Trump's dismantling of our justice system to undermining the jury system in our court system. He's attacking jurors. This is a federal offense, jury tampering, and nothing is being done. How is this man allowed to get away with thumbing his nose at the law on every front? Every front. So let's get a little soul palate cleanser, shall we? Stephen Colbert went down to South Carolina, where he enjoyed a beer with Elizabeth Warren. Now, I'm going to play this very short video. It's only about 90 seconds. It's a little segment of the piece he did with Elizabeth Warren. For those watching on YouTube, you get the extra bonus of the visual that goes along with it. But it works as audio only for those of you listening to the audio podcast or listening on Progressive Voices. It's a little game called Identify the Billionaire. Take it away, Liz and Colbert.
Here's what I'm going to do. Okay. We're playing this little game, if you're okay with it.
Okay.
You don't look at the photo.
I'm not.
You hold it up. I'll describe the billionaire to you and see if you can tell me which one it is.
Okay.
Show that one to the camera.
Okay.
Okay.
Show it to the camera.
Never shows emotion. Looks like he cut his own bangs with toenail clippers.
Bill Gates.
Knows everything about you. Is willing to...
Zuckerberg.
Yes. That's it. Perfect. Perfect.
Yes.
Okay. There you go. Like the underbelly of a hairless cat.
Gosh, that's so many.
Like Lex Luthor, but he knows more about you and he's less trustworthy.
Oh, Bezos.
Bezos, exactly right. He's spending so much money on this election that right now this might actually be a commercial for him and we don't know it.
Mike Bloomberg.
Yes. Okay. I cannot begin to tell you where he got his money or why he's wearing that tie. I'm not entirely...
Tom Stein.
Yes, okay. He's a talking waterfowl. He swims in a basement full of gold coins. He wears a top hat. He's owned by Disney. He's, pass. Scrooge McDuck.
Oh my gosh, it's Scrooge McDuck. Oh, you said he does the backstrap in the gold coins only. Of course it's Scrooge McDuck.
Okay.
He doesn't wear pants.
No, he doesn't.
He doesn't wear pants. Scrooge McDuck. He doesn't wear pants. That was the best line of the night. All right, so a little bit of humor from Elizabeth Warren. And she can, you know, joke with the best of them. All right. Welcome back. Oh, okay. So before we get into what's news and we bring Howie Klein on board, I got to talk for a moment about the hypocrisy of today's Democratic Party. And in fact, rather than even, you know, opining and mouthing off, I'm just going to read to you a little bit from the New York Times, from a piece written by Lisa Lehrer and Reed Epstein. And the headline reads, Democratic leaders willing to risk party damage to stop Bernie Sanders. The headline kind of says it all, but I'll share with you what they wrote. Anyway, a little bit of it anyway. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi and Senator Chuck Schumer, the minority leader, hear constant warnings from allies about congressional losses in November if the party nominates Bernie Sanders for president. Democratic House members share their Sanders fears on text messaging claims. Bill Clinton, in calls with old friends, vents about the party getting wiped out in the general election. I'll go back to that. Remind me to go back to Bill Clinton, which I will in a moment. Continuing, New York Times. And officials in the national and states parties are increasingly anxious about splintered primaries on Super Tuesday and beyond, where the liberal Mr. Sanders edges out moderate candidates who collectively win more votes. Dozens of interviews with Democratic establishment leaders this week show that they are not just worried about Mr. Sanders' candidacy, but are also willing to risk intra-party damage to stop his nomination at the national convention in July if they get the chance. Since Mr. Sanders' victory in Nevada caucuses on Saturday, the Times has interviewed 93 party officials, all of them superdelegates, who could have a say on the nominee at the convention, and found overwhelming opposition to handing the Vermont senator the nomination if he arrived with the most delegates but fell short of a majority. In recent weeks, Democrats have placed a steady stream of calls to Senator Sherrod Brown of Ohio, who opted against running for president nearly a year ago, suggesting that he can emerge as a white knight nominee at a brokered convention, in part on the theory that he may carry his home state in a general election. Others are urging former President Barack Obama to get involved to broker a truce, either among the four moderate candidates or between the Sanders and establishment wings, according to three people familiar with those conversations. And it goes on from there. Hey, Democrats, what the fuck didn't you learn from 2016? Why is it so difficult to let the people vote and let the voters' will determine who will be the nominee? What a concept, right? And speaking of Bill Clinton, he worked behind the scenes 4 years ago to help make sure that Donald Trump was the Republican nominee, because the common wisdom was that no way could Donald Trump beat Hillary Clinton. And here we are. And things couldn't be much worse. No matter what we imagine, things couldn't be much worse than they are right now with Donald Trump in the White House. The only way they could be worse is if he wins another 4 years. And mark my words, if the Democratic Party and the party elders do something like and this is all speculation at my point, but look, we are three contests into this election. The only states that have voted so far are Iowa, such as it was, New Hampshire, and Nevada. We have South Carolina on Saturday, and then Super Tuesday on Tuesday coming up, where things will be a whole lot clearer on Wednesday. But should things go as so many of the party elders are afraid, and Bernie Sanders comes out of Super Tuesday with a pretty much insurmountable majority, and enters the convention with an insurmountable majority, maybe not a majority, but a plurality, more votes. And I'm not saying, you know, if Bernie comes in with 30% and someone's nipping at his heels at 20 or 25, I'm not saying that Bernie Sanders should necessarily get it. But if Bernie Sanders comes in with, say, 45% and the next closest one has 20%, really, Democrats, you're going to come in and work against the will of a plurality of voters in the Democratic primary? And then you're going to tell everyone else who's run, who I don't know who will still be in the race by, you know, convention time, but say it's Elizabeth Warren and Joe Biden. I'm hoping Michael Bloomberg is long gone by then. Say it is. You're going to tell them that forget it, doesn't matter that you've spent the last 2 years of your lives doing this, so you put everything else on hold, you know, you went for it, but we're going to push you aside and draft Sherrod Brown? I don't think so. And you're going to let Michael Bloomberg buy the nomination and expect this huge coalition of young people and minorities and others who traditionally have not participated in the political system because they don't trust it, who've all come out to vote for Bernie Sanders. You're going to tell them their votes don't count, and you expect them to come out and vote for whomever you decide to put in his place? I don't think so. They are making a huge, huge mistake. Now, I rag on MSNBC all the time, and for good reason. I threatened to play this yesterday with Laffy, but we just ran out of time, or Tuesday with Laffy. So let me play it for you now. Chris Hayes, one of the few remaining personalities on MSNBC who I can actually listen to, and oftentimes says things that make sense, like this.
You notice there's a bit of a freak out among certain segments of Democrats and members of the media about Bernie Sanders' strong position in the Democratic field. And there are, I think, two aspects to the freakout. One substantive, from people who just, they don't like his politics and his policies. They think he would be a bad president. And to that I say, fine, that the argument over which candidate's policy platform best serves America is the right argument to have during a primary.
Absolutely.
But the much bigger argument, or the one that I see more often, is that Sanders is sure to be an electoral disaster. He's going to be George McGovern all over again. He's going to get annihilated. And I am just here to tell you that the evidence we have, to the extent we have evidence about an unknowable future, just does not support that
Hello.
At all. I mean, I spend all day looking at this stuff. I would love to know the future, as we all would. We can't know the future. All we can do is just look at some of the evidence that we have. And I'm telling you, it's not in the data. It just isn't.
Not there.
Here are the head-to-head matchups between President Trump and the Democratic presidential candidates. He is consistently in poll after poll after poll at or near the top of all of them. while the candidates who are characterized often as more electable are lower. Sanders has higher favorability ratings than any other Democratic presidential candidate in the field.
Yep.
His campaign has raised more money. His campaign's cash on hand in the latest FEC filing more than doubled the other non-billionaire candidates. And his ability to raise money is not nothing when it comes to electability and possibly $1 billion being dropped on his head. Now, there are swing district congressional members in Congress who really do worry about Sanders' effects on them, about being dragged down on those down ballot races. And I gotta say, they might be right. They know their districts well. They also might be wrong. I don't know. I do know, I definitely heard that a lot in 2016 from a lot of swing Republican members. As political scientist Kyle Condit points out in New York Times op-ed, those fears about down ballot drags might be overstated. But I'm open to the data. We'll see. I mean, look, left-wing candidates sometimes lose. They sometimes get drubbed. George McGovern wasn't a left-winger. He was a liberal, but he famously lost in a landslide defeat to Richard Nixon in 1972 after his insurgent progressive campaign managed to capture the Democratic Party nomination. And that's a trauma that has stayed with people for generations, understandably so. If you can point me the data that we have where Sanders is 7 points behind in head-to-head matchups with Trump, I think there'd be real reason to worry. But it's just not what the data says.
No, it isn't.
If you don't like Bernie Sanders because you don't think he'd be a good president, then that's your choice. You should act on that as a citizen. But if you are freaking out because he is so obviously an electoral disaster, I'm here to tell you it's just not what the information that we have now suggests.
Thank you, Chris Hayes. See, a man with brains and integrity who has obviously told the people at Comcast who own MSNBC, to take your anti-Bernie status and shove it. All right, maybe he didn't use those words, but he's seen, you know, if you watch the entirety of the broadcast day at MSNBC, Chris Hayes pretty much stands alone. And I applaud him for that. And because of that, I watch his show whenever I can. Now, yesterday, you might have heard me tell the story about my little Twitter exchange with Lawrence O'Donnell, in which I kind of called him out because I remembered him saying that he was a socialist. And in fact, I found some, I mean, he said it more than once. He's proclaimed this proudly for years and years and years.
I, Glenn, unlike you, I am not a progressive. I am not a liberal who's so afraid of the word that I had to change my name to progressive.
I'm not either.
Liberals amuse me. I am a socialist. I live to the extreme left.
Right.
The extreme left of you mere liberals, okay?
Okay. So it's interesting because I've never heard Chris Hayes say anything remotely like that. Yet Chris Hayes has no problem, you know, speaking truth to power and say, hey, this bullshit that people are spewing about Bernie Sanders not being electable, there's nothing to back that up. It's just simply not true. And I don't hear that from Lawrence O'Donnell. Now, to be fair, I don't watch Lawrence O'Donnell as often as I watch Chris Hayes, frankly, because I get pissed off when I watch Lawrence O'Donnell because of the two-sided approach that he takes. I mean, on one hand, he's a, you know, he's an extreme liberal and a socialist, leaving you mere liberals in the dust. And on the other hand, he's freaking out over Bernie Sanders' potential win. So I challenged him. Actually, I called him out on Twitter and said, what's up with this? And to my surprise, he responded to me and started trying to, you know, everything was about semantics. So I just finally said, we're getting nowhere here. Why don't you come on my show and we'll talk about this? And he said, I'd love to. Let's do that. And as I mentioned yesterday, my show is live at 3 Eastern. Hopefully that's going to change soon. Stand by. His response to me was at 11 a.m. And by the time I hit the air yesterday, not another word, not another tweet on his Twitter feed. And last night he had begun tweeting again, but no response to the number of, you know, messages I sent him saying, hey, how about today? How about 3 o'clock? Let's do it. Let's set a date. But I awoke this morning to an email sent to me somewhere around after midnight last night by Lawrence's assistant saying, how does the week of March 9th look for you for an interview with Lawrence O'Donnell? I was pleasantly surprised and I said, great. I gave him times we could do it live. And I said, and if those don't work, I'm happy to tape at a time at his convenience. And I got to say, I'm impressed. Because, my paranoia went to, all right, so he spoke to Joy Reid, who said, stay away from her. She's bad news. She hates us. She's a troll. She's a whatever. I can just imagine what Joy Reid would say to her colleagues about me. But I give Lawrence O'Donnell credit. So sometime the week of March 9th, it seems like he's going to come on the show and we will have a nice civilized conversation about democratic socialism, or as Lawrence puts it, European socialism, and Bernie Sanders, and why his network is so bound and determined to derail Bernie's candidacy. So we'll do that. All right. Moving right along. All right. Oh, it's getting late. I've been just mouthing off for a while. So we'll do a quick timeout. We'll take care of what's news. And we'll come back on the other side with Howie Klein of Down with Tyranny and the Blue America Pack. Well, I'm not going to do it live because I've been speaking for a half hour and we've got Howie coming up. So take it away, Nicole.
I read the news today, oh boy.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
Donald Trump finally addressed the coronavirus threat by convening an actual press conference in the actual White House briefing room. Only the second time in his more than 3 years in office that he stood at that podium. And true to form, he lied about the threat and showed his complete ignorance on the subject.
There's no reason to be panicked about. But when I mentioned the flu, I said, actually, I asked the various doctors, I said, is this just like flu? Because people die from the flu. And this is very unusual. And it is a little bit different, but in some ways it's easier and in some ways it's a little bit tougher. But we have it so well under control. I mean, we really have done a very good job.
After downplaying the threat from the likely pandemic, Trump surprised everyone, including his Health and Human Services Secretary, Alex Azar, when he announced his choice to lead the government's response.
He's been terrific in many ways, but he's also very good on health care. And we really followed him very closely. A lot of states do. When Mike was governor, Mike Pence of Indiana, they've established great health care. They have a great system there, a system that a lot of the other states have really looked to and changed their systems. They wanted to base it on the Indiana system. He's very good. And I think, and he's really very expert at the field. And what I've done is I'm going to be announcing exactly right now that I'm going to be putting our Vice President Mike Pence in charge. But he's got a certain talent for this.
Despite Trump's assertion that Pence is really very expert in the field and that he's got a certain talent for this, one need look no further than his tenure as governor. Pence wrote an op-ed saying smoking does not kill. He doesn't believe climate change is real. He takes issue with the effectiveness of condoms. And the worst HIV outbreak in Indiana's history happened on his watch in 2015. As a member of Congress, Pence had voted to cut funding for Planned Parenthood, which led to the closure of a clinic that had been the only HIV testing center in Scott County, Indiana. 2 months passed from the start of the outbreak in 2015 before then-Governor Pence declared a public state of emergency. As cases spiked, Pence reportedly turned to prayer. I kid you not. Shortly after Trump's news conference, the CDC announced that one American who had not traveled abroad and had not had contact with anyone who had contracted the virus. As of Thursday morning, according to the latest information, COVID-19 has killed 2,804 people around the world and infected at least 82,171 people in some 50 countries. The virus has been confirmed on every continent but Antarctica. Hundreds of new cases have already been reported today in China and South Korea alone. From the Purging Continues files, the White House demanded the ouster last week of Pentagon Policy Chief John Rood after the former industry executive opposed the administration on plans to pull U.S. troops from Syria and its policy toward Chinese tech giant Huawei. According to six current and former officials, Trump's campaign to root out anti-Trump members of his administration following his impeachment acquittal provided the NSC the perfect opportunity to finally oust Rood. The hits just keep on coming. The House of Representatives on Wednesday overwhelmingly passed legislation that would classify lynching as a federal hate crime. The Emmett Till Anti-Lynching Act, which was introduced by Congressman Bobby Rush of Illinois, passed on a 410-4 vote. The four who voted against the bill were Republicans Louie Gohmert of Texas, Thomas Massey of Kentucky, Ted Yoho of Florida, and independent Justin Amash of Michigan. I don't get it. The legislation is named after Emmett Till, a 14-year-old African-American boy who was lynched in 1955 in Mississippi. The House vote came decades after the House first approved the bill, originally introduced by Congressman Dyer of Missouri. That legislation was ultimately filibustered and defeated in the Senate. The bill is expected to go to the Senate by the end of the week, before the end of Black History Month, and if it passes, will then make its way to the Oval Office. Yeah, that's if Mitch McConnell allows it to be brought up for a vote. Yeah, we'll see. All right, well, it is that time of the week again, so we don't have any cheesecake on the menu, but let's mix up a good batch of Dirty Debbies, shall we?
Are you a multinational corporation hungry for a treat? Well, come on down to Schmucky Chucky's, where you'll personally be seated by Chuck Schumer himself.
So many dishes, and they're all fresh.
You're gonna love our Blue Dog special, the Dino Burger, because we say so.
A good hamburger and french fries.
And every burger comes with a side order of...
grits. I love grits. I love anything with corn. It's corn.
All for only $50,000. Wash it all down with a Dirty Debbie.
9/10 water, 1/10 oranges. After a week or two, you drink this, it's 200 calories and it's acetic.
And wipe your mouth with a tissue print of Glass-Steagall. For dessert, try our DNC tarts.
Little cookies, tell the quality of that.
Most restaurants give you a mint, but at Schmucky Chucky's, you get complimentary.
Sweet and low.
Who picks up the tab for all this? Find out now with Howie Klein of DownWithTierney.com on the Nicole Sandler Show.
Oh, hello, Howie Klein.
Hi, Nicole. How you doing?
I'm okay. How are you?
Good, too. Very good.
Good.
Always good. I'm always good.
You are. It amazes me. You know, we have a lot of, we have some people in common from my days in LA radio, your days, of course, as president of Reprise Records. And I keep up with a lot of these people on Facebook, and it astounds me. You know, these are people that I only know through the music industry, through, you know, in days when I never talked politics with anyone. And it's amazing to me how ill-informed so many people are, and it's just shattering so many illusions of mine. I need to just, you know, step away from the social media from time to time, because it's really it's depressing.
I know what you mean, but let me just ask you a question.
Yeah.
By ill-informed, do you mean not for Bernie?
Not only not for Bernie, but singing the praises of Mayo Pete, or saying the only way we're going to win is with Joe Biden. It's like, no. Look, I get it. Not everybody likes Bernie Sanders, and I don't expect everyone to. But I would think if they don't like Bernie Sanders, they'd at least want Elizabeth Warren to win. You know, I don't get the thought that Joe Biden or Michael Bloomberg stands a chance in hell of winning.
Aren't you happy that at least they're not saying we need to reelect Trump?
Well, there's that. Well, and if that was the case, they wouldn't any longer be part of my so-called friends on Facebook. I mean, yeah. Anyone who thinks that way, I have nothing in common with. But I would think that people that I've known for years, that I've respected on some level would at least, and what gets me is, again, these are people, look, you and I deal with this day in and day out. This is what our lives are these days. Those people are still in the music industry, so I get they're not as entrenched in the news and in politics as we are. So I try to, you know, give them the benefit of the doubt and think I can pass along some pertinent information. But they all come back with, and I get this not only from people in the music business, but others as well, who don't pay attention throughout the year or throughout 4 years, but once every 4 years when primary season rolls around, they're the experts and they know everything. And if you dare to suggest something, you're the idiot. And how dare you? You're so intractable. You're a Bernie bro.
Well.
Yeah, I guess. It is what it is.
I have good news on that front.
Do you?
And this is really, really good news that keeps going by without being noticed, but
okay.
It's important.
Yeah.
So polling has consistently shown that fewer and fewer American voters think of Trump as honest and trustworthy. And it's now down to 32% of people who think of Trump as honest and trustworthy. So 32% of the people who when he speaks, believe him. Now, I imagine they're all going to die from the pandemic because
mm-hmm.
They believe him when he says that, it's nothing.
Right.
But I'm not really – I didn't really mean to bring up the fact that all of his followers are going to die. What I did mean to bring up was that if they don't believe him, that and then he's running around and screaming his head off that Bernie is a socialist, or that whoever is the Democratic nominee, I'm sure it probably will be Bernie, mm-hmm. is a socialist, you know, the only ones who will believe him are those 32%. So that's kind of a good thing. You know, I was looking, a poll just came out from Marquette. So Marquette, from my experience, they seem to be the most accurate pollsters of Wisconsin voters. They're there and they always seem to get it. They're very thorough and it's a good poll. And what it showed, it was a little scary, was that, you know, although in the primary, you know, Bernie's way ahead, so that's mm-hmm. not the scary part. He was ahead by over 10 points. But what the scary part is was how close it was in the matchups with Trump.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because they weren't just polling Democratic voters; they were polling statewide voters of every stripe. And the only Democrat that would beat Trump in Wisconsin, if the election were held today,
Bernie Sanders,
is Bernie.
Right.
All of the other Democrats either lose to him
mm-hmm.
or are tied with him. A lot of them are tied with him. Unfortunately, Elizabeth Warren, from what I could tell, did the worst.
Ooh.
You know, Trump would beat her by quite a few points, and everybody else pretty much is tied with Trump, except Bernie who would beat Trump.
Mm-hmm.
And but it's all very close. But still, you know, you got to look at that, and you know, the Democrats have to take Wisconsin back if they, and I think they're going to, but they really need to take Wisconsin back if they want to win this election. And Buttigieg isn't going to do it, and Biden's not going to do it. And Bloomberg's not going to do it,
right.
And Elizabeth isn't going to do it, and you know it's really Bernie who is the one who can do it. So that's that's a very, very important thing to remember. And what I was getting at though is when these people hear Trump, they're not going to believe Trump. They've learned.
I said,
you know, there's still 32% who will. They will believe Trump, and there's nothing that's going to convince them. And if Bloomberg or Biden. Or Mayo Pete think that the way to win is to appeal to those people. They're wasting their time. There's nothing. I mean, can you just imagine after all of these, what is it, 3.5 years or whatever
yes.
it is,
mm-hmm.
of going through what we just have gone through, that there are still 32% of Americans who believe what he says?
It's stunning.
I mean, what? How scary is that?
Who are those people? And why?
Exactly. Who are they?
Right. It's frightening.
Who are they? I mean, I tell myself, okay, they are people with, you know, really, really, really low IQs. That's all, the only way I can explain it.
Or
I mean, even
they're
if,
very, very...
Even if you or, want Trump because you want his economic policies.
Uh-huh.
Oh, and you know, I'm not saying they're completely, you know, morons. They
no,
have a
just
reason
selfish.
For why they like him. They're mistaken, but they have a reason.
Right.
But do they believe what he says? I don't think those people believe what he says.
No.
I think the people who believe what he says are really
stupid.
You know, I mean, I don't want to be derogatory towards a third of the country. But, you know, I mean, how stupid are they?
Exactly. Well, Trump said, I love the poorly educated, and that's why, because they believe his lies. Look, he gets up at this, has a press conference yesterday to final, because he's shamed into dealing with the coronavirus, knowing that we are not buying his bullshit anymore. You can't say nothing to worry about. As soon as the weather gets warm, it's going to go away. Because every expert in the world is saying he doesn't know what the fuck he's talking about. So, you know, so he does this thing, and then he still goes on to say, don't listen to what all these people around me are saying. Listen to what I'm telling you, because I'm the expert. And so I don't think people believe him, the ones you're talking about. I think there's a good portion of the American public, and unfortunately I know a few of them, who have a lot of money. And that's all that they care about, because they're just plain selfish. And they
but
want
that's
to-
32%. That's
no,
the
that's
1%.
Not 32. Exactly. That's the 1%. No, the 32% I think are the poorly educated that Trump wants to keep poorly educated, so they keep buying his bullshit.
Yeah. And that's not enough to win the election against, someone who really wants fundamental change in the country.
But
that's why I think Bernie would beat him.
Well, I think so too. Here's the other thing. I hope that Bernie has surrounded himself with smart enough people who understand the way the Electoral College works. Because I do blame Hillary Clinton for losing the last election. How can a candidate who is touted as the most qualified candidate in the history of the world to ever run for president win by almost 3 million popular votes, and yet still lose the Electoral College by under 70,000 votes, because her campaign didn't take into account the way the Electoral College operates. And, you know, despise Trump as much as I do, at least I give his people credit for saying, oh, shit, it doesn't matter how many people vote. It matters that we get enough majorities in these states to get over the 270 Electoral College votes that we need. And Clinton's people didn't do that.
She did campaign very hard in Pennsylvania, which is considered a blue state, but she lost it.
Right.
So she did try in that one state. Maybe she didn't do it right. I'm guessing she didn't do it right.
Mm-hmm.
She ignored Wisconsin, took it for granted that she was going to win it. That was a huge mistake.
Yep.
She wrote off Iowa.
Yep.
And that was a gigantic mistake as well. That's been a blue state for some time. And she just threw it in the garbage and said, I can't win there. I'm not going to bother with them. Big, big mistake. And Michigan, I don't know what her problem was there. I mean, Bernie won Michigan, beat her in the primary, and she never seemed to get over that slap in the face, because that was the beginning of a big she didn't have a majority of votes at the convention. She went in with a plurality.
Right.
She was ahead of Bernie, but not a majority.
Nope.
And I think she blamed that on Michigan for starting a trend of, you know, that it's okay to vote for Bernie.
Wow.
And she didn't do her job there, and she lost that state. And that's pretty much why Trump is sitting in the White House now.
Yeah. No, I agree with you. So, Howie Klein, you've got a piece up that went live this morning at downwithtyranny.com, headlined, Bernie is an existential threat to the personal class interests of the 1%. They will never support him, and he doesn't want their support. You know, it's so funny. I live in South Florida, of course, so I've been, you know, in the middle of all the nonsense over his comments about Castro. First of all, Castro's dead. We're not in Cuba, right? I mean, what the fuck? You're arguing over
dead
semantics.
To normal people.
Yeah.
But you live in South Florida, and you know people are insane there.
Yes.
And to them, he'll never die until they die.
Well, that's true.
He's the boogeyman.
Right. But these people are freaked out over semantics. And they're screaming, he'll never get the votes of the Cubans in Miami. He never would have gotten the votes of the Cubans in Miami. So what are you clutching your pearls about?
Right. And I mean, and when they say the Cubans in Miami, they mean the elderly.
Of course.
That's really who they're talking about. Because the new generation of Cubans in Miami, they love Bernie.
Yes, they do. Just like young people everywhere do, because he has their best interest in mind. Finally, a candidate who's saying no more status quo, going back to the way things were before Trump came into office, is not good enough. We need real systemic change. We need to put aside the interests of the 1% and the corporations and deal with, as I said earlier, the poor schmuck who's working for a living. And with the threat of this coronavirus, another thing that I'm not hearing anybody talking about is how many people work for hourly wages. They don't get paid sick leave. What happens when people aren't going into work? Because we will get hit by this epidemic. It's going to get bad before it gets better. There are going to be companies that say work from home or don't come in, or we're going to be closed for a little while. Those people who work hourly, they're screwed. Not only can't they go to the doctor, but they won't be able to pay rent.
You know, if what happened in Wuhan starts to happen in the United States,
mm-hmm.
we're looking at a real catastrophe.
Yes, we are.
I saw one figure today that said, you know, there's not going to be dozens of deaths or hundreds of deaths or thousands of deaths,
mm-hmm.
but they're expecting millions of deaths. And that, and you know, if there's one thing we know about Donald Trump, is that whatever decision he makes will be the wrong decision about anything. That's what's always been, and that's what always will be. So we're fucked.
Yeah.
Sorry for the French.
No, that's fine. I say it all the time. No, it's true. And so, the argument of the elites on who's not going to vote for Bernie. Well, you know what? I'll tell you this. The people who will vote for Bernie, but are not in, you know, everyone's screaming, all those, they're all Bernie or bust. What, if they're not going to vote blue no matter who? Bernie Sanders has excited people, has gotten people who have never participated in the political system, in the electoral system, because they don't think their vote counts, number one, and they don't think that there's anything in it for them. They finally have a candidate who's speaking not only to them, but for them. The only reason they're participating is because of Bernie Sanders. And if he's not in the race, they have no reason to participate anymore. Does that make sense? Howie, did I lose you? I'm talking and talking and I don't hear Howie. I think I've lost Howie Klein. All right, Howie, I don't know if you're still there. I'm going to hang up and call you back because I seem to have lost you. We were speaking with Howie Klein. For some reason, the phone seemed to have gone dead. So let's call him back and hopefully he'll pick up. That was weird. I realize as I'm talking and not hearing Howie speak back. This is great radio. I live radio, love it. Okay, hopefully he picks up here. Come on, Howie. Come on, Howie. You can do it. If this doesn't work, I'm gonna have to try to do it.
I am back.
Ah, yay! Do we know what happened?
No, I you were talking and all of a sudden it just went dead.
Right, I was talking and then I paused and you weren't there. So, all right, it's the gremlins in the system. What can I tell you? So I don't even know where we were. I obviously talking about the Bernie conundrum, I guess. I don't know what point we were making when we were so rudely interrupted, but
I don't know either. So
here we are. So Saturday is the South Carolina primary, and so Joe Biden will likely win there. Do you think he has any chance going forward, or is this his last hurrah?
Well, it's a good question, and that's occupying everybody today, because what he wants to do is win big, which he may or may not do. He may not win big. There are different polls. There's one that came out that they're touting from his campaign that they're going to win really big. But there's other polls that show that it's very close between him and Bernie. Steyer has come in and seems to have taken a lot of votes away from Biden, and we'll see if that holds up. I was reading a memo – I think it was today that one of the campaigns put out that shows that it really is the last hurrah for him, and that it's not much is going to happen. Even if he wins, now he has every plan right now that he's going to win big and get the media to start remarketing him as the comeback kid.
So kid,
he's going on Fox on Sunday. Remember,
I saw that.
Going to be on Saturday, and then the next day he's going on Fox on Chris Wallace's morning show to start crowing about how he's the comeback kid, and he's hoping to catapult that into a big win on Super Tuesday, which is just a few days after that. Now, I don't see that. you know, it really does look, Super Tuesday really does look like it's going to be a big, big, big Bernie thing. And I think what Biden is trying to do is to win. He knows he can't win against Bernie, but what he wants to do is beat
the others.
Biden. I mean, Biden wants to beat Bloomberg,
Klobuchar,
Amy Klobuchar, right. And the twerp.
Right.
And that's really what his effort is about for Super Tuesday. And I don't see it. I mean, he has very, very little money. So his ads. I mean, he's spending in the whole week what Bloomberg spends in a few hours.
Yes, right.
So, I mean, I mean, on the other hand, Bloomberg, of course, was, you know, really severely damaged by his two debate appearances. People didn't know who he was.
Right.
People in New York knew who he was.
Now they're hearing it.
But no one else knew who Bloomberg was. He's just this guy on the ads, millions and millions of dollars worth of ads,
right.
Where he is talking about, you know, they're seeing these ads of him, it looking like Obama endorsed him.
Right.
And of course, Obama didn't endorse him. But for someone who doesn't pay attention, it looks like Obama endorsed him.
Right.
So that's, you know, I mean, then they got to look at him, you know, doing these debates. And he did very, very, very badly.
Well, and then what he did on Tuesday night had a major Freudian slip. Now, I didn't when I recapped the debate yesterday, I didn't play this clip. I'll play it now. It's only 11 seconds. But listen carefully as Michael Bloomberg starts talking about how he financed all of these new Democrats, an interesting way to say new Dems, I believe.
I mean, he didn't know that, I don't think, but they are new Dems.
Right.
That he was talking about.
It was an interesting turn of the phrase there. And he almost said, I bought them, and he caught himself at the last minute. Here's the clip.
Well, All of the new Democrats that came in and put Nancy Pelosi in charge and gave the Congress the ability to control this president, I got them.
Wow. That was, you know, the Freudian slip heard around the world. And none of them...
And it was untrue. I mean, it was also a lie because, you know, who did he – first of all, he only put money into about 20 candidates of the several dozen who won. They are the worst people in Congress, the worst Democrats in Congress. That he didn't back one progressive. He backed only conservative Democrats like himself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like one of the big ones. I had a call yesterday from someone in Orange County saying to me, why did Harley Rauda endorse Bloomberg? So I said, well, Harley Rauda was a Republican until he decided to run for Congress, and then he switched to be a Democrat. Harley Rauda was donating money to Mitt Romney.
Right.
He's very, very much like Bloomberg. But aside from the ideological similarities between the two of them, you know, Rauda didn't really want to go super negative on Rohrabacher, the incumbent Republican, but it had to happen. So Bloomberg stepped up and put in $4.5 million. People don't understand. Bloomberg doesn't give money,
right.
nor do other billionaires. They don't give money to the candidate.
Right.
You can't write a check for $4.5 billion. What you do is you do an independent expenditure, supposedly not coordinated with the campaign, and that's what Bloomberg did.
Mm-hmm.
He put $4.5 million into TV advertising, just smearing Rohrabacher in a way that no candidate can do.
Mm-hmm.
You just can't go that negative,
right.
or you suffer from it. And that's why Harley Rauda endorsed Bloomberg. Bloomberg gave him a seat.
Right, right. And this
but
is
very,
all
very,
we should,
few,
this
very
is,
few seats that, the, did he did was he responsible for?
Mm.
He like Trump, he tried to take credit for dozens of candidates that he had nothing to do with. He said he bought or got
all
these candidates. He didn't.
Right.
He didn't even get half of them.
Right.
And the good ones who were elected, he had nothing to do with whatsoever, like people like AOC or even, you know, people even not even as good as that. People not just – when you look at who he helped, every one of them except two, every single one of them but two have Fs. None of them have A's. None of them have B's. I'm talking about ratings from Progressive Punch. They all have F's. They don't even have D's. They have F's. Mm-hmm. That's what he brought. And that's what he's bragging about. And that's the kind of a president that he will be. It's so important to defeat this guy.
Oh, it really is. And I guess the only encouraging thing is now that people have heard him debate, his numbers are falling. They didn't help him at all. They hurt him. So the calculus on the part of Elizabeth Warren and Amy Klobuchar, who especially wanted Bloomberg in these debates, wanted the DNC to change the rules to allow him in because they wanted to be able to go at him. And Elizabeth Warren was brilliant. I don't have the clip, but she took him down the other night when she talked about him financing her opponent's race against her in Massachusetts, and thankfully she won. That his all
millions
the
and millions of dollars of financing, not wow. $2,800,
right?
Millions of dollars. That's
right.
And that's Bloomberg.
Yep.
People don't understand that he is responsible for the Republicans controlling the Senate. Just think about that. Think about the U.S. Senate. Without Bloomberg, it could have been a much different Senate.
That's right.
A Democratic Senate. But think of all of the bad things that Mitch McConnell has done. Bloomberg has very much helped to make that a possibility.
Exactly. And the fact that, again, we had a mass shooting over the weekend. Now, Bloomberg is, you know, he's good on guns. That's the one thing I'll give him. He's good on guns. He started the Every Town for Gun Safety, the Mayors Against Gun Violence, whatever his organization is called. But he also helped propel so many of these fucking Republicans back into office that Mitch McConnell still controls the Senate, and the background check bill that passed the House 1 year ago today is still sitting on Mitch McConnell's desk because he won't even bring it up for a debate.
Well, and then you have Bloomberg, who doesn't really have a keen understanding of something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And he leaves it to a guy, I forgot his last name, Howard, whatever his name is, who makes those kinds of political decisions for Bloomberg.
Mm-hmm.
And we wind up in a situation where they're not looking in the long term. They're looking for a short term bet, like we'll elect Toomey because he'll compromise with us on guns.
Right.
Not thinking elect Toomey, and that means you're like making sure there's a Republican majority.
That's right.
Who are going to agree to all these nominations that Trump is doing for the courts, for example.
Right. And
Bloomberg doesn't think that way.
And
his I've been around a lot of CEOs for many, many years.
Mm-hmm.
And CEOs will make the worst politicians because they're the kind of people that they just say something and everybody around them just bows down and agrees with them.
Right. And that's
the kind of CEO that Trump is.
Yeah, that's what Bloomberg
and that's the
is.
Kind of CEO that Bloomberg is.
You
and they are the
right.
worst people to put into politics because politics doesn't work that way. What's happening in Trump universe now with someone like that. And it would be the same thing with Bloomberg. He's the same kind of guy.
Without a
everybody
doubt.
Everybody has to bow down to him.
Yep. So Howie, but the next time we talk will be next Thursday. It will be after Super Tuesday. You're in California. It's one of the Super Tuesday states. Any predictions? How we're going to emerge from Tuesday? Do you see anybody dropping out? You see anybody? I know it's asking you to look in a crystal ball, which you don't have. I wish you did.
What I see is that Bernie will solidify his lead in a gigantic way. That would be my prediction. I don't know if anyone will drop out. I mean, if Bloomberg doesn't do well, he doesn't have any. None of them have any incentive to drop out.
Right.
I mean, they all. You know, why should they? They
to
all
stop
are hoping
Bernie
for
Sanders.
A brokered convention.
Oh my God!
And anything goes.
Yeah, I guess.
If Biden does very poorly, his money is gone.
Yeah.
If Mayo Pete is already on a shoestring,
mm-hmm.
Elizabeth Warren has laid off staff.
Yeah.
She's getting ready, I think, to go on. Or if not to go, to at least like cut back on campaigning.
Yeah. Well, I guess a lot will be decided in the next week. And all I can say to everybody, I wish people would just vote for the person they think most closely aligns with their beliefs. With the way they want to see this country move. If they did, I think it would be a no-brainer. I caution everybody, stop playing pundit. Stop trying to predict what's going to happen. Vote for the person who moves you. Vote for the person who excites you in the primary. We have time to deal with the general, but I think if everyone votes for the person who most excites them, and everyone gets out and votes, I think it puts Bernie in a good spot. I hope.
And that's going to happen.
Yeah. All right. Howie Klein, always a pleasure. Find Howie at downwithtyranny.com, of course, and help the progressive candidates that are helped by the Blue America PAC. Thank you as always, Howie.
Thank you.
I'll talk to you next week.
Bye.
Bye. All right. Tomorrow, we'll be visited in the studio by Boca Brittany Summers. We're going to have fun, I hope. All right. Thanks for listening, everyone.